Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Triple Jump podcast. It's a video game podcast. My name is Ben.
My name is Peter.
And my name is Ashton.
Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
How are you all feeling today?
Good. Are you feeling better?
Much tired. Better, thank you.
Yeah,
you're tired?
Yeah.
You're going to be okay?
It's been a busy week for us all.
It has been really busy.
We've been doing a lot of filming.
Yeah.
But we've not had the COVID.
Ah, the cops. Mm. Yeah, no, I'm feeling much better, thank you. I've been a bit, I feel better today as we record, but the past couple of days that I've been in the office, I've still felt quite congested and scratchy throated. But I had the C-plops and now I am better. So yes. I'm glad to be back. Sorry to have missed such an amazing Dungeons & Dragons stream last week.
Did
you guys have fun?
Yes.
We did.
It looked fantastic.
What are you talking about? You were there.
Of course I was. Sorry, yes.
Penn Botter.
Yeah, I was there.
Have you watched
the
it?
Whole time. I watched it live the first half an hour.
Right.
And then I needed to sleep because I felt poorly, but I haven't had a chance to watch the rest yet.
Fair enough.
Was he good?
Yeah.
Did Kat weave a fantastic tale?
She did. She's brilliant. And some cool minis as well.
There were minis?
The big bad was great.
Mm-hmm.
Really enjoyed that.
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic. Well, you can go and watch the whole VOD now on our VODs channel, and you should go check it out because that's what we've done to celebrate 300,000 subscribers. Thank you very much to all of you for getting us there. Shall we crack on with perhaps a sponsor of some kind?
Oh, yes. Yeah, I have it this week. So you guys may know that there's a... Oh, you're looking for the spider.
Is he here?
Can you see him?
No, not yet. I think the weather's a bit all over the place. They're not really sure what to do with themselves. There was our spider on you yesterday.
Yeah.
There was, briefly. I did have a spider on me,
Anyway, the sponsor for this week's podcast, you might have heard of a game that's really similar coming out next week about a little cat in a big place.
Right, yeah.
Well, unfortunately, this game's coming out around the same time, and I think it's not going to get as much coverage because you know it's maybe not what people wanted so much.
Right.
But you know, when you were an adult, when you were a child.
Okay. Yes.
And you'd go to Legoland.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there was that tiny town, and that how cool that was. Mm. Well, they've basically taken that premise, but the Godzilla is a cat. So coming next week on the same day as Little Kitty Big City is Little City Big Kitty.
Right.
Like
a kaiju.
Yeah, like a kaiju.
Catch-ju.
Yeah, it's in a little Legoland type tiny town, and they've let a Maine Coon cat onto the premises. And it's causing destruction.
Oh, bloody hell.
Similar premise in the sense of you're causing chaos and you're being cute and you get to wear hats. However, you do have to hear the tiny screams of the little civilians.
You are
the
murdering
town.
People.
It's a bit darker than Little Kitty Big City.
And nobody wanted this.
Well, they're just worried that no one's going to want it because of the other games coming out at the same time.
Sounds cuter.
Yeah, it sounds cuter, more adorable. But this might be for someone. Some people, the people who don't like adorable, cute games, they might be really into
or love killing little civilians.
Yeah. They might be into Little City Big Kitty.
Yeah.
Amazing. Yeah. What's it out on?
Nothing. It's not real.
Oh, for Christ's sake.
There's just the one game. It's a little kitty big city.
Why lie, Ashton? Why lie?
Funny, innit?
Yeah.
Every 3 weeks, you lie to us.
Mm. Yeah, but every 3 weeks, you guys lie also as well.
I have no memory of that. No, we're not sponsored by Big Kitty Little City. We are, of course, sponsored by our wonderful patrons over at patreon.com/team triple jump. If you go and support us there, you can submit questions to this podcast, which gets you a shout out. You could become, at a certain tier, a podcast producer, which guarantees a shout out in the special podcast producer bit. But you also get access to early episodes of Worst and Weirdest Games and exclusive access to episodes of Main Menu and Rules Boss, all at patreon.com/team triple jump. It's great.
Tuesday.
Yes, exactly. That's the day.
That's later.
It is later.
Not there yet.
No.
TripleGR.mup is our website. That's where you can find links to everything we do. Our YouTube, our Twitch, our Discord, our Cameo, if you want to get a cameo from one of us. TripleJumpShop.com is where you can go and buy some merch. I am actually wearing new merch.
I'm wearing not new merch, but you can still get this.
You can still get that.
I'm wearing mid merch. Not mid quality.
Yes. Top tier quality.
Mid newness.
Yeah.
TripleJumpShop.com. Get yourself some lovely threads. And once again, patreon.com/team triple jump. Thank you to all of our wonderful patrons. A few things out this week, right, guys?
Yeah, we've got a huge list, which, all being well, will be out, will have come out on Friday. It looks like that is definitely happening.
Fingers crossed.
It looks like that is definitely happening.
60% of the time. It works 100% of the time.
101 biggest games industry moments. It's a very interesting one, I think, because, you know, normally with a ranked or with a 101 list, you're kind of talking about the same kind of thing every time. You know, it's best games or strangest characters or whatever. But this is like, it's a real mixed bag of news happenings, technological development,
fallouts.
Yeah, world records, loads of interesting stuff.
Lots of little pockets of history.
Yeah.
And it's all in, because it's in no particular order as well, you're just getting served left, right, and center all these quick fire facts
bouncing
that you might not have known about, or that you might want to know a little bit more about. This was written by Kat quite a while ago now. Mm-hmm. This has been in production for a little bit, but we're excited to get it out. We've just got a few minor changes to make at the time of the recording of this podcast.
Which, yeah, apparently a game, you don't pronounce it Oxo, you pronounce it Nought Cross Nought. Yeah. So well, I had to record it.
Yeah, I mean, it is a game from the 50s, the 60s, the 50s or something. Yeah. So it's like, there's no, everyone, anyway, doesn't matter.
Doesn't
but the
matter.
Point is,
anyway.
It should hopefully be ready in time. We've got a finished version of it, but it's a huge video. It's like 2 hours and 40 minutes.
Yeah.
So we hope you enjoy it. Go get hungover or something and then watch it and have a great time. You have to be hungover though. That's the rule.
It's the rule.
It's also a Weirdest Games week.
It is out on Sunday. It's already out if you're a patron. It's been out for a week. But if you are not a patron, I mean, why aren't you? Hey.
Hey.
You can watch the Weirdest Games Ever, The Bachelor, the video game. Mm. Ben found love in a hopeless place.
I did.
Yeah.
And the hopeless place was the Nintendo Wii.
Mm. Yes. It's good fun. So check it out.
On the channel on Sunday.
Yes.
Time for a question, I think.
It is. This is from Richard Major, who says, "Hello, Bab. The Fallout show has been extremely popular, and rightfully so. It's been so popular, in fact, that apparently Microsoft, and then parentheses it says presumably Bill Gates himself, has told Bethesda to not worry about Elder Scrolls 6 and instead concentrate on the next Fallout. Do you think this is the right idea? Is 4 to 5 weeks of Fallout popularity enough to make such huge internal changes? It must be quite jarring for creatives to have to move from one project to another. I'd have thought that both projects would suffer from all this upheaval. Kindest regards, Richard." Kindest regards to you, Richard, but you're wrong.
Me woo, wee woo.
You're wrong there. You've unfortunately, I think, perhaps got the wrong end of the stick in whatever write-up you may have read, but that is not the exact story here. So this is from, I found an article from the Metro, and they say, according to Windows Central's Jez Corden, speaking to the Xbox 2 podcast, Microsoft is, quote, "currently formulating plans on how to get the next Fallout here for us sooner rather than later." So they are trying to capitalize on the popularity. It says, in the past, Corden's proven to have been or to have reliable sources at Microsoft, but it's unclear if he knows exactly what Microsoft is planning or indeed whether Microsoft has decided. And he continues, "we constantly talk about will we even see Fallout this decade? And the answer is, I think we will." And I think that is all that is the basis of this story. So there's no mention of Elder Scrolls being pushed. The furthest I've seen is that a few different articles have speculated that maybe Bethesda are going to have to outsource development of Fallout if they, because they are doing Elder Scrolls 6 at the moment.
Expansion also, for Starfield.
Also,
as well.
Yeah, looking at Starfield and working out what more they can do with that because it has a 10-year plan.
Did you see that quote from Todd Howard about Starfield?
Oh yeah, the one he said. Yeah, I think people didn't really connect with Starfield because it's not
too different.
It's not enough like a Bethesda game. People have said, "I want my Bethesda games to do this," and we didn't do that. It's like, that's not it, Todd.
That's not really.
It's because people just didn't like it. Yeah, sorry, mate.
So Bethesda are busy with things, and they're suddenly thinking, "Oh man, if we released a new Fallout tomorrow, it would sell like hotcakes, but we can't release one tomorrow. We probably can't even release one in the next decade because we've got so much on. So perhaps they're going to have to get someone else to work on it."
Mm.
Do you think that's the best plan? Or do you think they should put something aside?
No.
Table Starfield.
Table Starfield probably, but yeah. If only they had another company who'd worked on a Fallout game before.
Imagine if they belonged to a massive conglomerate who owns literally thousands of studios and has tens of thousands of employees who are just desperately looking for a game to work on because they keep getting sacked. Wouldn't that be crazy if they could just give it to someone else?
That would be crazy.
That would be wild.
The question is definitely, for me at least, less about, it must be quite jarring for creatives to have to move from one project to another, because again, that's not the case. Yeah. That's not what's happening here. But more so that how will Bethesda react if, and I think it's probably highly likely, Obsidian are given the keys to Fallout once again.
So.
Because they would be the obvious choice.
Yeah.
When did Fallout 4 come out? 2015?
Yeah.
I doubt, unless they make something in their own engine, which potentially Bethesda might get a bit stroppy about, they may end up They may end up working in the Fallout 4 engine and make a Fallout New Vegas.
No!
Approximate, you know, where it's in the same engine as Fallout 3, but I feel like the time's passed for that. That should have happened like 3 or 4 years ago.
I'd be more surprised if we got a new Fallout game. I would be less surprised if we saw a remaster of one of the Fallout games that's already out and about. If they remaster New Vegas, or they try and remaster Fallout 1 or 2. I don't know if they will, but it would be interesting to see if that's what they decide to do. It saves them the job of having to create an entirely new story and an entirely new set of characters if they've got something already established. And people love New Vegas, so there would be, you know, plenty of precedents to remaster it. And I know that we were talking last week or the week before about what we think qualifies a game to be remade or remastered. And I do think that, you know, if they were thinking about this, they could have definitely had something ready to announce around this TV show. So they didn't know it was going to be quite so popular, but
yeah.
And The Last of Us announced the remaster like 2 weeks after the TV show finished. So, but yeah, I do think that they would be, I mean, of course they're going to be working on a Fallout next. It's kind of the next thing after Elder Scrolls that people want to do. But it does kind of feel like, do we have to wait for you to finish this one thing before you can work on the next thing? Or can we not have both? Is that available, Todd? Can we have both, please?
Please, Todd.
I do think that they've kind of had a bit of a rough few weeks of it with the old Fallout 4 3, whatever it was, like the upgrade.
The next gen upgrade.
Yeah, which like broke a bunch of stuff and barely changed anything in the game. So I do think that maybe they're like trying to hurry stuff around and like announce, like get the Fallout stuff out, and maybe that will be to the detriment of themselves. But I would like to see some more Fallout content from them. And like you say, if they've got Obsidian on the roster, why wouldn't they use Obsidian? Obsidian working on, is it Avowed? Is Obsidian?
Possibly. They've got a few things. They're doing,
I know they've got like an RPG type.
What's it called?
I'm going to look it up.
The one that everyone confuses the names of because there's an indie game with basically exactly the same name. It's the one I loved. I really enjoyed it. It's the space one.
Yes.
Outer Worlds. Outer Worlds is the one I'm thinking of. Yeah. That completely slipped my mind. They're working on the Outer Worlds too. Obsidian, I've said it before on this podcast, I think are the Insomniac equivalent internally within Xbox's studios.
Oh yeah, they're working on Outer Worlds 2. That was supposed to come out this year, but I don't think it is at this point.
I hope it comes out soon. They've been smashing it out of the park. They've been making lots of really interesting games, and I think they would just be a perfect choice.
It is avowed that they're working on.
Okay. They would be a perfect choice to make a Fallout game. Games we know are getting bigger and bigger and more expensive to make, and mm-hmm. Obsidian games in particular are famously big anyway, and that's only going to get more complex. When was the Elder Scrolls 6 announced? It was like...
last year?
Feels like... No, it was at least 2 years ago. Yeah,
it was a long time ago. It was pre-COVID, I think.
I was going to say 3 years
ago. It was an
E3
or something.
We didn't hear about it for ages.
No,
and then
didn't.
I feel like we got some... Like, they talked about it again last year in their big Microsoft showcase thing.
Did they?
Yeah, I feel like we got a little... We're still working on it.
Well, yeah, they may have said that, but yeah.
But we're not going to get that until probably closer to 2030, at which point they might be able to start the next Fallout game. I think it's honestly...
2030 is so long away. That's absolutely crazy to announce a game.
I honestly think that it would be not only foolish, but if Pride was involved, very selfish for Bethesda to hoard such treasured IP and not touch it for almost a decade.
Basically just throwing money away.
Exactly. Why wouldn't you? You know, what's the term? Biting your nose off to spite your face, whatever it is. It seems so pointless, especially when, yes, like people, when they think of Fallout, they want basically a Bethesda RPG. That's what they're thinking of. But the license is so strong that it could be adapted to other things that your other studios are better at, like a shooter or a strategy game or a flipping, what was it, Fallout Shelter? That game was really fun. I loved Fallout Shelter. There's loads of ways to keep the IP fresh and alive without having to spend the better part of a decade making a game.
And also, everyone kind of knows that Fallout New Vegas is, if not the best Fallout game that there has been since the 3D ones or ever, it's certainly a lot of people's favorites.
Yeah.
And it just seems like it is the most obvious solution. If you are too busy doing Elder Scrolls and you need someone to step in and make a new Fallout, I mean, I agree with you, Ben, they could do other things too, like make, you know, smaller games or whatever. But if you want to make a proper Fallout game, get Obsidian to do it.
Mm-hmm.
What are you doing? But again, it is that kind of, you get the sense that they're just a bit cross that the one that they didn't make is the one that people quite often say was a really good one.
Yeah.
And a bit of a kind of a cult classic.
And if you're not familiar, by the way, Obsidian and Bethesda do have historical beef. I don't know if that's now been squashed or quashed, since they were brought into the fold together under Xbox. But I have a feeling that there's probably some resentment that still lingers there. This stems, of course, from Fallout New Vegas getting, I think, an 84 on Metacritic, and all of their bonuses were contingent on them getting an 85.
Yes, that's right.
And so there's been a lot of bad blood about that. And I just think I can't put the blame on Microsoft or Xbox here. I think it's solely on Bethesda I know their games take a long time, but to not have the foresight to get something Fallout relating in the oven and it being nearly 10 years since Fallout 4 came out, that's bonkers to me.
Yeah. I know it took 76, them... 76,
Ben. That's a very good point. You know what? I completely forgot about Fallout 76. I withdraw my point. They made Fallout 76.
Mm-hmm.
But it's perhaps
when
highlights
was that,
a larger point.
2019?
2018. It perhaps highlights a larger point that Bethesda have... could maybe be accused of perhaps slightly mismanaging the franchise that they have historically done so well with. And so, yes, please, for the love of God, even if it means that we're not going to get a Fallout game by the time season 2 of the show comes out, give it to someone who can make something.
It's a kind of a series of spiteful looks for Todd and Bethesda at the moment, because not only is there this where seemingly they're just kind of like keeping hold of Fallout and, well, maybe they're not doing that. Maybe they will give it to someone else. But, you know, at the moment, this is happening. But also, Todd has been quoted saying, in future Fallout games, it will never leave the USA as a setting.
Mm-hmm.
And that just feels very, very pointed.
I'm fine with that. Oh, the Fallout London.
Yeah.
But he's basically saying, yeah, flip that London mod, am I right?
It does feel like that.
Especially given that there's, you know, some people are saying like, oh yeah, we think that possibly they released the update partly just to break the London mod.
That was about to release.
Bit of a conspiracy, maybe, you know, like it was conspiracy theory. That may not be what was, that might not have entered.
If it was a completely random, that there hadn't been the TV show out like 2 weeks before and they just started to announce it,
if there was
maybe
no TV
it would be.
Show,
but they just they just announced a TV show and they have a big uptick in players, which they assumed would happen after the Last of Us 2 TV show kind of helped with player base. So I don't think that they did it.
I agree.
Spite.
I don't think so.
Definitely plays into the narrative that Todd is very protective and doesn't like others taking their shine, their spotlight, similar to New Vegas. Like, oh, you like New Vegas, do you? Well, screw you.
Yeah.
And then this London thing is coming out and, oh, no, here's an update that we worked really hard on that works great.
Yeah.
And it broke your mod.
Oh, what damn a shame. By the way, it's never leaving the USA.
I understand. Obviously, you know, we all understand the reasoning for it staying in the US because that is, he made good points.
Like, thing,
The whole vibe of Fallout is that precisely, and you inherently would lose something if you went somewhere else. But it's very interesting.
Yeah. Just with all the sort of context around it, it kind of feels a bit.
I love the games that Todd makes. I just haven't enjoyed the last couple.
Yeah.
And I think, I hope he plays nice. He has an extraordinary amount of power and pull and say. Mm-hmm. And I do hope that if there isn't something already happening, some kind of Fallout project is underway somewhere. And Obsidian, even though I imagine they're extremely busy because they've got several projects on the go, they are such an obvious candidate.
It's definitely, there's something definitely in pre-production in that, like, he already knows some of the story beats of Fallout 5 because he's talked about that kind of in relation to the show. But yeah, it depends how far along he is, really, as to what we can see, as to what might happen with this and who it might go to.
Mm-hmm. They need to finish that PSP game first. Yeah. Still haven't cancelled that either, which is mental. So as far as I'm concerned, it's still in production. It's still happening one of these
That's
days.
That's how it works. Well, now let's talk about... I thought we could do this segment. We tried it last week, Ben. You weren't here. And I thought we could try it again with you to see if it works with the three people or is it better with two.
Was it good with two? Okay.
Yeah, but we have to test it with three. So I thought,
Well, if you do your guys' bit first and then you can decide and we can just...
See how it works.
Well, you could just decide to skip the third. If you think it's going to take something away, we'll just go straight to question two.
Sounds good. I thought we could call it What We Play In.
It's What We Play In time. Time to talk about the games what we have been playing. Peter Austin, what have you been playing?
I have finished Tomb Raider 3.
Hooray!
I fought a Spider-Man. Not a Spider-Man, but
you
a Spider-Man.
Spider-Man?
Yeah, I fought Spider-Man.
Okay. Did you kill him?
Yeah, I killed Spider-Man.
But he's so friendly.
I left him
in the neighborhood.
In Antarctica. So he's
Where's it at?
He's way out of his neighborhood.
He's all frost
yeah,
up
so
now.
It's a borough in New York. Yeah. Antarctica, New York.
Yeah.
Got great sandwiches.
So I'm sorry about that, Spider-Man. But I'm quite pleased to have finished the Tomb Raider Remastered Trilogy now. It's the first time I've played all three games. It's a completion. And I had a great time, but it has also taken many, many hours of my life. And I'm looking forward to moving on to something else. But it was really good. I had a lot of fun with it. And it seemed to get less buggy over time because I did see a few...
You killed the Spider-Man.
Well, exactly. That's the biggest bug of them all.
It's one fewer.
But I saw a few updates kind of coming in that I didn't sort of notice obvious changes, but it just seemed to kind of stabilize a bit more as well, which is good. Not that it was particularly buggy to begin with, but there was that underwater painting.
Yeah,
that
it was good
through.
Stuff.
Yeah, that was good. And I've also finished collecting instruments in Skyrim. It's pretty underwhelming, isn't it? The Bard's College.
Is that what you have to do in that?
Yeah, mostly. You do like one quest at the beginning where you go and recover like a poem or like an epic poem thing that's in a book that there's like one copy left in a tomb somewhere. And then when you bring that back, they're like, great, you can enter the Bard's College. Thanks for doing that. And then you just speak to a couple of Bard members who are like, oh, could you go and get this magic drum for me from this cave? And you're like, yes, I will. Mm-hmm. And you get a load of like stat upgrades and free training and stuff in loads of different skills if you do it. But it's not it's not as exciting a story as, say, The Dark Brotherhood or The Thieves Guild.
Right.
But hey, I did it. And I also played a bit more of just other bits and bobs of Skyrim. But I think I've kind of reached my... I've scratched the Skyrim itch once again.
Yep.
And so I think it's going to be all new games for me next week. But that's all I've been playing. Oh, and at time of release, I'm probably playing on the Nintendo Wii right now. Playing some, like... Wii Sports Resort or something, because I'm currently with my family.
Lovely.
Yes.
I've played a few things this week. Speaking of Fallout, I played some more Fallout 4, and as I was playing it, I was like, it would be great if I could play this with my friend. So I played Fallout 76.
What?
Me and my boyfriend have been playing Fallout 76.
Yeah.
We build some little houses nearby each other. His keeps getting raided by super mutants. Mine doesn't. I don't know why. I told him we need to put some turrets up, but he's like, I can't afford turrets. And I'm like, oh, sorry about that, chum. But yes, I've been enjoying playing Fallout 76.
So you started playing Fallout 4 maybe when I was off last week?
I've started playing Fallout 4, a few weeks ago.
How did
now.
You find it?
I was enjoying it. Issue I had, I was telling you about last week, the issue I had was that the loading times are so long.
Right,
I was
with
playing
the
it
patch.
On PC. Well, the patch has not, PC, has right. barely changed anything, so it's not made it any better. But on PC, yeah, it was like getting from inside a building back out to the wasteland took so long, like so long, that I would just be sat there like watching videos on my phone, because it'd be like 2 to 3 minutes of just like black screen while I waited for it to load the outside. But I was enjoying the story of Fallout 4. So then we dived into Fallout 76, and I had to Google, what's happening in Fallout 76? What is the story? When is this set? I'm confused. I had to Google it. We figured out what was going on, and then it all made a lot more sense. Mm-hmm. But we've just been kind of meandering around and doing all of the side quests and main quests, and we've been having a pretty good time with it. So I think we're playing some more of that. I think we'll probably get bored of it after a while, but I've been enjoying it thus far. Saved a giant teapot from a bug swarm.
Congratulations.
And then the other thing I've been playing, and the thing that's been taking up more of my time this week and also my boyfriend's time, is Dave the Diver. We both installed it on our PlayStations separately, and then I came downstairs and I was like, oh my god, are you playing Dave the Diver? He was like, I'm having a great time, you're gonna love this. And he was right. I have been loving it. That game is great. The gameplay cycle is so fun, and it's like, it's very mobile game in the way that it plays, but like obviously enhanced to a better quality of game. And man, I just have such a fun time swimming about and like catching fish. And then gradually, as the days progress, you like unlock more story stuff, and it gets easier to run your sushi restaurant. And yeah, man, that game is so fun. And it's so like head empty, catch fish type situations. And it's, once you kind of get into it after a few days and things become easier and you unlock upgrades and you unlock more equipment, like it just starts becoming such a nice time just bobbing around the sea. Obviously sometimes you get chased by sharks and that, and that's kind of scary, but yeah, that game's great. I fully recommend people give that one a go, because it's great fun.
Nice.
Yeah.
I finished the Fallout TV show and I really enjoyed it.
I have 2 episodes left.
Oh, okay. It's great. Mm. I really, really liked it. And it made me want to play Fallout 4. Mm-hmm. And so I'm glad that they end up releasing the patch. I'm just annoyed it didn't come sooner, because I finished the show before it was ready. But when it did come out, I downloaded it on PlayStation 5. I can't say that... it's made much difference to anything other than the load times, because the load times for me are way better than what I remembered. Like, yeah. they're like, that's the big difference. You can have it in fidelity mode or whatever. What's that going to do in Fallout 4, realistically? Yeah. So performance all the way. And also, when I first played it, when it came out, it didn't have like the creation club or whatever it's called. Mm-hmm. And mods were not available, but they are now. So I was able to add a couple of things in there. I did start playing as Lucy McClane from Fallout. Mm-hmm. Was it McClane?
Pass.
God.
I think you are right.
Yeah. It just feels weird because John McClane is a character. It's spelled differently. Anyway, I've started to play through as her. I've made
is
a horrible...
Is it McCarthy?
No. It's not that, I don't think.
There might be something in Fallout 76.
Melissa McCarthy, she's in Fallout 76.
No.
No, she's not. One of the things that it lets you do is customize your vault suit, mm-hmm. like as one of the things. So when you go to an armorer's workbench, you can change the number on the back. Mm. So I was able to change the number to be the correct vault, which 69. Was pretty cool. 69, yeah. and I made a horrible approximation of her, which isn't good. And every time I see her, I think that's an alien.
I started
doing something
that,
wrong with her.
And I was like, I don't have the skills to do
this.
Yeah,
I've seen some good attempts on social media.
Mm-hmm. Where there have been some, and there's actually a mod that I did download but didn't install because it would disable trophies. But I am thinking of applying the mod mm-hmm. and just using someone's actually pretty good version of her. So I've been playing that and I've really been enjoying it. Honestly, I'm wondering if maybe I am reaching capacity now, because when I first started out, I was having a great time. I wasn't really doing the main story. I was just sort of meandering from objective to objective.
Yeah.
And every time I discovered a new like named location, I would go into it. And I was really enjoying the sort of Bethesda open world design of looking at terminals and notes mm-hmm. and piecing together yeah. what messed up story and interpersonal conflict happened in this building. And it just, I was having a great time. And then you discover like 25 sets of power armor and you bring them all back to your settlement. And it's like, I don't really feel like I'm struggling anymore. And I know I could put the difficulty up, but you start hoarding like rolls of duct tape and toasters anytime you go out into the world so that you can craft things when you come back. Mm-hmm. And that kind of started to suck the joy out of things a little bit.
I kept being over encumbered mm-hmm. all the time. And the same issue I have with Fallout 76 is that I'm constantly over encumbered. Yeah. And it annoys me so much.
Over encumbrance is one of my least favorite things in any game.
Yeah.
I really dislike
it. I think any game where they really insist that they have to stop you carrying too much stuff, it shouldn't make you walk slower. No. It should just say, oh, you're doing half damage now, or like, you know.
You can't fast travel.
Yeah, or yeah, maybe. Well, even then, that's a bit of a faff, because it's like, the one thing I want to do is fast travel to a shop and get rid of all this stuff.
Yeah.
But, you know, they should just say, oh, you don't do as much damage now, mm-hmm. or you can only sprint for half the time. You know, like, just let me be able to get to a shop and sell all this stuff, and I'll come back. You know, come back to where I am.
It's a really tedious solution for a very video game problem. And I don't like it. It's not welcome. But I'm going to continue to play Fallout 4, I think, a little bit here and there. I am still enjoying it, but I do feel like I am reaching my limit of I just want to get to this objective, and I have passed 25 new named locations, all of which I feel a compulsion to go into, like I'm missing out if I don't go into them.
Yeah.
So I might have to streamline my experience a little more and focus more on the main story, perhaps, because I never took Nick Valentine with me as my main my main companion, and I would quite like to do that. And so far I've gone around Diamond City so many times so as to avoid starting that whole thing.
You've not been in yet?
No, not yet.
But you have like, there's like two quests after Diamond City before you even get Nick.
Oh, right. Well,
you
then
have
I'm
to
not
go
even
in
close.
And you have to get Piper first, and then you have to go get
not
Nick.
Even close then. I've got Curie, the robot, the French robot. Mm. She's with me.
Oh, I haven't got French robot. I've had a non-French robot.
Yeah, your boy from
Cogsworth.
No. There was another robot I just found on the street.
A different robot.
I don't think she's French.
Okay.
I don't remember being like, that's a French robot.
Oh, you'd know. To get the French robot, you have to go through a whole thing. But it's pretty cool.
I would enjoy
that story very much, I think.
I just found a robot on the side of the road. Mm. And she was like, oh, my friends have been killed. And I was like, oh.
Come with me.
Come with. And she was like, okay.
Yeah.
So we're hanging out.
I'm liking it. I'm going to play more. I'm sorry to hear that the update broke so many things for people. But for me, at least, it's just made the game load faster. Mm-hmm. And run it. 60 frames per second. I'm still having Bethesda things where I've gotten stuck in the environment and I've had to reload and all sorts of other nonsense like that. Like someone will start talking to you and I've thought my game has soft locked because it takes your ability away to interact with anything. And because they were on the ground floor of my settlement and they started talking to me, and then I went upstairs and I couldn't get out of my armor. I couldn't open anything. I couldn't open my Pip-Boy. And then eventually, I realized that, like, I think I saved the game, reloaded it, and then closed it and reopened it, and it was all the same. I realized that when I walked up to this person, the face button suddenly appeared when I got right next to them to choose a dialogue response, and I was like, oh, for Christ's sake.
Yeah.
So I was locked in, like, a dialogue that I didn't know I was in, and I thought my game had broken.
When I was playing Skyrim, I got stuck in a room, I was in a dungeon, and I opened this door, and it was a single, like, 1x1 tile with just some chests and, like, shelves in it, and I walked in and was getting all the stuff, and when I turned around, my companion was standing in the doorway with their shield and their sword just going like that, and I couldn't get past them, and I was, like, pushing them and, like, telling them.
I had that issue with, like, Fallout 4. I got stuck in a room.
Eventually, I managed to get them to get out the flipping way.
Yeah. Jesus.
I have had an issue with Fallout 76, actually, that I forgot to mention. I have it with every cooperative game ever, in that, why do we both have to do the quests for it to count for both of us? Why can't we do one version of the quest together and it counts for both? Because when you're a team, someone's a team leader, and if you are the team leader, you start your quest, like, you go into a building and it says enter as team leader, so you enter as a team leader. But if you're not the team leader, you can either enter with the team leader or go in solo. If you go in with the team leader, you don't get any of the mission markers, and it doesn't count towards nothing.
That's,
you have to,
stupid,
go in solo,
yes,
and do it at the same time. Luckily, like, it's only random. Like, every time I'm like, oh, this is like a quest, maybe this is going to be like enter solo situation, but that's always seems to be like fine. But it'll be like the odd side stuff where it's like, you have to, if you're going to do this, you both have to do it separately, and that always winds
that
me up.
Absolutely seems like something they should have fixed,
yeah,
for a multiplayer,
and you, like,
game.
Both have to go and find, like, the overseer's log. If I find it, Ben still has to come and find it as well.
That's really, really stupid.
Yes.
I gave up playing it with friends because back when it launched, nobody wanted to play it but me. So I played it by myself. So I didn't encounter any of that stuff. Mm-hmm. But that is so stupid.
But I'm at least allowed to open doors, unlike in Gotham Knights where they said I wasn't allowed to open doors.
Oh, yeah. That's good. Also, it runs at higher than 30 frames per second, which is also, you know, a huge boon.
A treat.
Yes.
One of the main things I played when I was sick was RuneScape, because I discovered the mobile app for RuneScape, which I was vaguely aware of, but didn't realize quite how actually really good that app is, because it's just old school RuneScape in its entirety. But instead of if you want to right click, you just have to press and hold. Like, it's perfect. It runs absolutely fine. I was playing it on my iPad. I just played just loads of it in bed, and I got so many of my levels up. I think I'm like level 40 in almost all of my combat levels, skills now. I've got rune armor, but not rune chestplate yet, because I haven't done the dragon's quest, as you know, Ashton.
Yeah, yeah.
Which you need
of
to
course.
Do before you can
big
equip
rune head over
the
here.
the rune plate armor. However, when I was wearing my adamant armor, which is the one below that,
what was it adamant about?
Not being rune.
Cool.
A guy stopped me and tried to trade with me, and I was like, okay, and I accepted. And he accidentally put into his trade window like 10 stacks of maybe 300 individual rune plate armors. And I was like, how on earth do you have this much high value stuff? And then he canceled. And I was like, okay, just showing off then.
Yeah.
And then he traded with me again and I accepted. He put a single rune plate armor in and accepted. And I was like, okay. And then I took it and I said, thank you. And he said, sorry. And I was like, what? So I waited to see if he'd type a follow-up message. And then he said, equipado. I think he wanted me to wear it because he could see I was wearing adamant armor.
Oh.
And I was like, how do I explain to this person who clearly doesn't have English as a first language that actually I can't equip it? And what if this person wants it back? Mm. So I logged out. And I kept the armor.
Equipado, and then you just vanished.
I just left. It was
it was
a spell.
A magic trick.
Yeah, exactly. I disappeared. I've still got this rune armor, though, so I'm going to use it when I'm able to.
Good for you.
The main thing, though, not the main thing, the last thing that I played, sorry, is Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3. Uh-huh. I finally traded in Suicide Squad. I waited just long enough to let its value drop.
I thought you were giving it to me.
Oh, no.
Did you want to play it?
Yeah, you said, I'll give it to you.
Ashton Matthews.
It's okay.
I'm sorry.
This
I waited.
Not friends.
Okay. I waited so long to trade it in,
okay. It's fine.
That it wasn't worth a great deal of money. And also, I forgot because it had been so long since we had the conversation about you borrowing it.
It's fine.
You would have loved it. You'd have had a great time with it as well. It's in.
It'll be on something.
I can tell you. I can tell you which CEX it's in if you want it.
I'm sure it'll be in a lot of CEX.
It probably. Yeah. Well, it is. That's it. Every I waited CEX. So long that it was worth like a fraction of the price.
How much was it worth?
Like 20 quid. Oof. And it was worth about.
It's more than I thought.
It was worth about £40 when I was looking at trading it in originally, which is when I should have done it. Anyway, I'm sorry I didn't give it
to
you.
That's fine.
But I did use it to get Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3, which had been slated last year. And yeah. I wanted to experience why, because I like a Call of Duty campaign.
The campaign's like 3 hours long.
Well, that's it. The campaign was... I actually made some notes because I was like, I cannot believe how cack-handed this game is. So on your home screen, when you put the disc, this modern Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3 disc in that you have bought because it's a game that you want to play, it just says Call of Duty. And it says you've got trophies in it already. And I was like, what? What have I actually, did I buy the wrong game? And I checked on my shelf and I was like, no, that's Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3. Looked at the trophy list and it just combines the trophy list from the other Modern Warfare games. And I was like, okay, right. Already doesn't feel like this is worth being its own game. You start it up, it takes you to a really generic splash screen that doesn't say anything about it being Modern Warfare 3 and basically acts just as a landing screen for Warzone and multiplayer, and that's it. If you want to play campaign, or it's got a zombies mode as well, you have to install those separately. At no point when you start it up does it ask you what you want to install.
Right. I was going to say, because it does, like, there's the last one I played, I think it was Vanguard, I'm not sure. You had to pick which things you wanted installing, if you wanted the multiplayer and the campaign and the like other stuff as well. Yeah. But that came up when you put the disc in.
That with the Master Chief Collection in Halo, but I've not. You don't tend to see that in most games.
Well, you have to actually. I had to go down two and then across like three squares before I could get to campaign. And then it said, you need to install that. So I installed it, got it downloading, and I was like, okay, right, that's installed. Can I play? You need campaign pack 2 as well. I was like, okay.
Why didn't you just do that?
Right, that's going to be another 14 gigabytes. Is that okay? I was like, bloody hell, fine. I just want to play it. When you start it up, it forces you to watch a trailer for the latest season of the multiplayer.
Oh, God.
And then sits you through, I flip you not, 3 or 4 mandatory battle pass screens where it's like, look at all the amazing stuff in the battle pass. And again, at no point does this game clearly label itself as being Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3. And I understand that they want Call of Duty to be a platform that people go back to. But if you're selling people a game every year, you cannot present it as ambiguously as they did. And then, of course, the campaign is like 3 hours long. And it's got really well done... the cutscenes are great, but they really leaned into these just half-assed open combat missions, which are basically, here's a bit of the Warzone map that we have trimmed out and plonked into a level. You can approach the objective any way you want. And it's like, this is not how I want to play a Call of Duty game. I get it for Warzone. The zombies mode is exactly the same. It's just a Warzone map where you just meander about. And I get that game mode had to evolve as well from just the round-based stuff. But it's in the campaign, it's in the zombies mode. I don't know about the multiplayer, I didn't even touch that, but obviously it's inspired by and definitely in Warzone. But you just come across crates of varying value in the game and can pick out and swap weapons. You have to put armor plates in. The weapons have like a rarity and you can see the attachments that are on them and stuff. And it's like you pick up what are they called? Like what kill streaks used to be. So like airstrikes and stuff. Right, you just pick them up out of crates in the campaign.
Right.
And I'm like, I can see right through this to how you have just lifted this stuff from Warzone. And also, it doesn't make any kind of sense within the confines of the game itself. The story just ends, considering that it's like meant, I would assume, if they were following the same trajectory as the original Modern Warfare trilogy, it would at least conclude. But it doesn't. It feels like it ends halfway through the game. Like there's just a moment that happens and then the credits rolled. I actually paused it halfway through that cutscene because I was going to eat dinner. And then I came and I put my console into rest mode, lit it up the next day, watched 15 seconds of cutscene and then the credits rolled. And I was like, this is a piss take. This game is an absolute piss take. And there's a part of me that always thinks when I see Call of Duty get sort of a middling reaction, like, yeah, well, at least I'll enjoy the campaign. This game was an absolute, as I said, piss take. I just couldn't believe all the corners that have been cut. It was awful. So they really, and it's just in time for Microsoft to complete their purchase of Activision as well. So fingers crossed, as a Call of Duty campaign fan, that whatever they put out this year is a, perhaps a little bit more thoughtfully put together.
Right? I think they're getting rid of, I don't think they're going to be campaigns going forward. I think that they know that, like, that's not me.
It's just me.
I'm the only... I would, if the Call of Duty campaign was good, like, I would be inclined to give it a go. But they've just been the kind of middly for, like, the last few years.
I just like the big bombastic fireworks show. You know, like, the literally, it used to be criticized for being a corridor shooter.
Just set piece.
I love that. Yeah, just put me through, like, a crazy Michael Bay set piece extravagant. I like that sometimes, but they've actively veered away from it. And made it worse. I don't know.
Well, Microsoft have said that for their big showcase at, you know, video game Christmas time in the summer. Next month when we all get very excited about games. They're doing their main showcase. And then they've said, and then immediately following that, we're doing a specific showcase on a certain project. And they've been really quiet about it. And then there's all these insiders saying, it's Call of Duty. Don't get too excited. It's Call of Duty.
Right.
So we'll find out all about that, I'm sure, in June.
Yeah. Mm. Well, sorry for going, hashtag going off. But,
it's okay. It earned it.
Yeah.
So sad.
Yeah. Well, should we move on to question two then?
Yes.
Let's do it. Comes from Big Money Bobby Vegas. Hi, Bap. Shockingly, I would like to talk about money.
Big money.
Square Enix have just announced an $140 million loss in the last financial year in content abandonment losses, i.e. projects, content and games that were being worked on but then cancelled internally. Clearly, the company is spreading itself too thin, and one wonders which products were cancelled in favour of bullflip like Foam Stars. How would you like to see Square Enix focus their efforts? New and exciting IPs or established properties like Final Fantasy? Take care of yourselves, take care of each other, and take care of your wallets. BMBV. Thanks, Big Money Bobby Vegas.
Thank you.
I have a little thing from IGN about this situation. In a warning to the investment community, the Japanese company said it would recognize the extraordinary loss for the fiscal year that ended March 2024. This is a result of a change in approach to Square Enix's development of what it calls HD video games, PC and console, as opposed to mobile and MMO. In its note, the company said it wants to be more selective and focused in the allocation of development resources, and as a result of the close examination of its development pipeline with this in mind, is taking the multi-million dollar loss. Square Enix did not name the cancelled or rescoped in development titles. At the meeting convened on March 27, 2024, the board of directors of Square Enix Holdings Co. Limited, the company, voted, in light of the myriad changes underway in the environment surrounding its group, to revise the group's approach to development of high-definition HD games, with the intention of being more selective and focused. You've already heard that. But yeah, they lost 2.21 billion yen.
Ooh.
Because of their, what did they call it?
Content abandonment. Condiment.
Condiment losses.
Condiment losses.
Keep taking the ketchup home.
It's costing us millions of dollars.
2.2 billion yen's worth.
Yeah. So that's what's going on at Square Enix at the moment.
On a... My personal answer would be that I would love to see them try some new IPs, particularly stuff that is perhaps not so JRPG-ish. Mm-hmm. Because at the moment, Square Enix don't happen to be making anything that is really up my street. I'm not a Final Fantasy kind of person. They've restructured recently anyway, haven't they?
You don't like Foam Stars?
Not a big Foam Stars guy, but hey.
Really?
Maybe I should.
Crazy, I would have thought that you would be really big into Foam
Stars. When I saw it, I thought...
That's a Peter Rosting game.
I absolutely love
Splatoon.
Which, and as we know, they are completely different
totally
games
different.
And
they're
should
not
be
same.
Compared to
they're
each
not
other.
The same.
One has foam and one has splat.
Yeah, come on. One has squid and one has not squid.
One has really questionable art hung up in public spaces.
Yes.
And one doesn't have a public at all.
Indeed. they at the moment don't happen to be really producing anything that I'm super into. I really liked the first Kingdom Hearts. and probably should have played the second because I think I would have liked that too. But then it got all weird and confusing and then I got a bit scared and didn't want to pursue it any further. But so I'd like to just see them maybe try something new and exciting. And I forget exactly what they do and don't own anymore. You know, what is sort of Square Enix adjacent as well. That is what I would like to see. I think, though, you know, Final Fantasy is always going to make them money, I would like to think. They don't seem to think that. It seems to be really pessimistic.
They don't
about
think
it half
that
the
any games make yeah. them money. No. They I don't know what the standards that they have for themselves. I don't know if they have just got really home, like. The bosses are like Tiger Mum types, like you have to get an A star.
Or maybe that's why they're abandoning stuff internally as well. I mean, I know it happens everywhere. Like this isn't like some big revelation that, oh my God, they've been cancelling a load of stuff internally. But maybe they should be a little bit more kind of optimistic and say, you know what? We do make good games and people do like them. All right. They don't necessarily, you know, our most recent projects might not have made the same amount of money that the ones that came out during COVID did equivalent. But, you know, perhaps if they've been a bit more positive and proactive and just carried on with one or more of these internal cancellations, it might have actually gone very well for them. You know, they might not have the best attitude.
I just think that, like, when you look at it and you think, oh, they've cancelled other games, but Foam Stars still came out. In my head, I'm like, what were these games? Like, I can't imagine, well, they probably weren't online games like Foam Stars, but I think the reason they made Foam Stars is because they were trying to get in on the online game trend in the fact that they like, wanted to take audiences away and get themselves a battle pass. They saw the battle pass dollar signs and they thought, what could possibly go wrong? Let's make a foamy game. But I would love to know what these games that were cancelled by Square Enix are and whether, like, they say projects and they kind of say content as well. So it's not necessarily all games. There's probably other stuff like maybe art books, Returnal art book.
And some stuff might not have been cancelled. It might have been, like, retooled into, say, Foam Stars or something.
Exactly.
Like, you know, they made some losses on, we worked on... It wasn't Foam to begin with. It was Marshmallows.
It was Splat.
Yeah, and then they changed it to Foam Stars.
Yeah. So I do think that, like, maybe we're seeing... I think that the thing about Square Enix is that they are really, really transparent with their views about money and the things that they have, like, what they've done well and what they deem as, like, not so well. I feel like we hear a lot from them about whether profits are good from games, whether games have met their expectations, or whether they are, like, in this situation, have lost money by some business practices that they have been implementing. And I think that maybe Square Enix isn't potentially losing any more money than anyone else, but I do think that it's interesting that they are so transparent with the fact that they have lost this money in these things, and maybe this will make them change the ways they work. Game development is always going to have projects scrapped, ideas are always going to end up not working, so it's not like there's going to be a net zero on content abandonment. But I would love, and not sound like a broken record, I would love to see some new IPs. I feel like we often get sequels and remasters, and as much as I liked Final Fantasy VII, it's the only Final Fantasy games I have played, and I am fine with that. Like, the other ones don't interest me that much. And same with Kingdom Hearts. I have watched my boyfriend play through them multiple times, and I still cannot begin to fathom what the story of those games is. He tries to explain it to me, and it's like he's speaking a different language.
Such a shame. Such a waste of, like, something that, I mean, the original idea should
have a universal appeal.
Yeah, it appeals to people who are more into their Final Fantasy and their JRPG. But also, if you like Disney, that is enough to carry your interest in that game. I really enjoyed the first and knew about two of the Final Fantasy characters that were in it.
Yeah.
So it's a shame that they've taken it that direction.
But yeah, I would like some new IPs, please. Square Enix, thanks. Not Foam Stars, though. Just something else.
But the music in Foam Stars is so good.
Yeah, that's where they put all the money in.
So good. Like, I couldn't believe, when I started it up, I was like, this game sucks, but this music is so good. It's really
great. The J-pop is hard.
Oh, it's fantastic. Anyway, I'm actually going to disagree with you guys. I'm sorry. I personally think that they need to focus on their existing franchises. Because while the new IPs that they've attempted haven't been, like, completely without merit, for example, they have been poorly received and generally just sort of like memed upon and flopped on by the general gaming audience. They don't have a great track record. So there was Foam Stars, great music. Stranger of Paradise Final Fantasy Origin. That was part of the Final Fantasy series, admittedly, but they tried something new and different. That was memed into oblivion. And then you had Forspoken as well. Yeah. There was Tower of Babylon or Babylon's Fall or whatever it was
called.
It was Platinum Games. And there was the story about there was only one person playing it online or something. And I hate that line of thinking, mainly because I agree with you guys that like I would love to see new stuff rather than existing franchise stuff other than, you know, Final Fantasy, Dragon Quest or Star Ocean. But they have such a terrible track record of doing new things, and they have either sold off or closed the studios that they used to have that were doing interesting things like IO Interactive, Crystal Dynamics, Eidos Montreal, that now, if they are, as BMBV says, if they it certainly seems internally maybe they are trying to spread themselves too thin. And if they know that they can make a Final Fantasy game that's going to be really well reviewed and at the very least sell millions of copies, then that's probably a better bet than something like Forspoken, which is a big swing but a massive miss. And it plays right into everything that we've spoken about before in terms of games costing too much and it being such a big gamble, and it's a shame that we're not seeing new stuff. But if we're talking about Square Enix, who have a terrible track record, and also they are internally seemingly... how they're run is baffling in that everything loses money. And I don't know how they can...
It's not that everything loses money. It's just everything doesn't hit the profit margins that they do.
Their profit margins are mental. I don't understand how in the same year they can make at least two of the very best games that released that year and then also still lose that much money. And I know in this specific case, it's because they have a load of cancelled projects. But if I were to take over Square Enix, knowing everything that I know, which is an immense amount, very clever guy, I would personally say, right, stop with all the weird stuff and let's just focus on the things we know, at least until we can stop reporting that everything is underperforming.
Well, but I disagree with you in a way that I think that everything that they have done, those projects that have been memed on and kind of failed out, are because they've been trying to hit the boxes of like what's already out, and they've been trying kind of like not doing that much new, with Forspoken being the exception, which again, I don't necessarily think was the game's fault. I think that was the internet just dogpiling on a game that was like didn't necessarily deserve all the hate that it got. But I do think that like these other games that you mentioned are kind of just like they're in a sea of games that look so similar because they're just trying to do what everyone else is doing. They are special when they do something totally different, and they
have Square Enix capable of that.
But like they are, we've seen them do it with like other with Final Fantasy and the way that they have developed that. So why couldn't they do that with something new and take everything they've learned from Final Fantasy and put it into a new IP?
That's the question, though.
I don't think
I would love to see that, but I don't think Square Enix can do or would do it. They either cancelled all of the things that you would like to see just now,
probably,
or it would be just like, let's try something new, but let's also play it safe and make something that's generic.
Well, I think that's where I don't think. We do disagree in that sense. Like my desire for them to make new stuff is purely a, well, what have they done for me recently? Like I putting completely aside the financial implications of it and whether I think any of it would be successful, I would just prefer them to make something new because I'm not going to play the stuff they're currently making.
Yeah.
But if I too were to take over Square Enix tomorrow, I would absolutely not be trying new stuff. I would say the money here is in Final Fantasy and the like. So I agree with you in that sense that like the sensible thing to do for them would be to just keep going with what is working. But, you know, I personally would like to see other stuff because I'm not a Final Fantasy fan. And I agree with like Forspoken as an example. Although I really didn't like it, I think the only place it really actually fell down, but in a huge way, was its writing. And I think like...
And we know that they can write well. So
yeah,
that's
true.
Annoying.
And I think that's partly... Well, I think that's mainly why everyone dunked on it so much. I don't think it played particularly badly. I think it looked really good. So, you know, Forspoken, although it was unfortunately a swing and a huge miss, kind of critically and commercially, as an actual objective product, I think it only really had one kind of one thing wrong with it, but unfortunately it was really wrong.
Yeah. It also released at a terrible time of year.
Yeah.
It was like first, the like 2nd of January is a terrible time to release a game.
Yeah.
They do have, who I forgot about, Tokyo RPG Factory. Admittedly, it's still an RPG. That is probably always going to be Square Enix's bread and butter. But they did actively try some new things. I Am Setsuna was gorgeous. Didn't set the world on fire, but it was new and it was different. It says here on their Wikipedia article that the studio was merged into Square Enix in January of this year. So it just might not exist anymore.
Right.
No. So that's another creative, potentially new, interesting creative spark that they've snuffed out. And I'm sure they had good reason, you know, for it, as we've said, like the boring financial aspect. But yeah, don't get me wrong, I would love to see new stuff from them. Square Enix have, as I said, a really bad track record with trying new things. And
yeah,
if they're losing money all over the place. No,
general,
not at all.
The general situation in gaming at the moment is do what you know because you know people will like it. Don't try something too different because it's a risk. And I think that is just a general issue, I think, with gaming at the moment. It's not a Square Enix specific problem.
No, and you're definitely right in that it's that view of them as being like, oh, nothing's performing well, is definitely down to the transparency of them talking so openly about how they want things to perform, even if those targets are unrealistic.
Yeah, it baffles everyone.
But they certainly have a reputation of like, oh, we've made a foam game. Oh, it's not done well. Oh, man. Well, classic Square Enix, right? Because none of their games do well, according to them. But they do. They do well. And anyway, it doesn't surprise me that it's Square Enix, and that's probably why.
It's almost as if they maybe shouldn't have sold some of their quite good little sub-studios to Embracer Group. Just
probably.
An idea. Maybe they shouldn't have got rid of Crystal Dynamics, for example.
Well, no, they did make they them took do, boobs away.
They did make them do that Marvel game. Remember that one?
Oh, yeah.
Remember that Marvel game? But then Eidos Montreal came out of nowhere with a bloody brilliant Guardians of the Galaxy game.
Yeah,
and then that's never happening again, is it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Can't have nice.
Maybe
things.
That's part of their 2.2 billion yen loss, is that they were like, let's cancel the second Guardians of the Galaxy game.
The one that everyone
because
wants.
The first one didn't sell exactly
12
how many
billion
I
copies.
Yeah.
And people keep stealing our ketchup. It's awful.
It's crazy.
Well, shall we move on to something a little odd?
And very current.
Yes. I would call it weird news.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
It's weird news time. Time for some weird video game news. Remember, if you want to submit some weird video game news to us, you can do so under the relevant social media post that goes out on a Tuesday. However, you did yours earlier.
No,
you
did it.
I'd already done it. However, if you'd like to guarantee a shout out at this point in the podcast, you need to go to patreon.com/teamtriplejump, support us at the appropriate tier, and become a podcast producer just like
Chip Thompson's Thumbs,
G.Y. Goliath,
Nexus Polaris,
Nicole Hansen,
Andy Scott,
Blake Thomas,
I'm way too high,
Timothy Bentley,
Kyle Gary,
Shaman Nomo,
Great Giggity,
Melody L. Bonnet,
Katie Garrett,
Huge Ass.
That's new. That's a good one.
It is a new one.
Gabrielle Philippink.
Potato Shack 99.
Eric Siu.
And Big Money Bobby Vegas.
You get to say that now because Huge Ass has come.
Huge Ass. I'm sad. I don't get to do Huge Ass. Right, you got some weird news, Peter.
I've got some weird news, Peter. It was sent by Stephen Skodes at sscodes8 on Twitter and also RB at r_b84 on Rose Twitter. Rules Boss. Yeah, Rules Boss sent this in. He actually sent it in 6 weeks ago, but it's only just arrived.
Yeah.
Right.
So according to Kotaku News, priest allegedly spent $40,000 on Candy Crush using church's credit card.
This was also sent in about 6 times on the Facebook post.
God. Was it?
Yeah.
I did check.
I think it was on there a lot.
Oh. Problem is now you have to, like, it doesn't show a little thumbnail on the Facebook post.
No, you have to click into it. You have to,
like, read the actual...
Twitter and Facebook have the opposite problem, yeah, Jonathan, don't they? Yeah. If only they could do both.
Where is it? Yeah, it was submitted by James Matthews, Kirk L., on Facebook as well. Oh, and Amy Wicks also.
Oh, see, mine was like acting up because I only had 3 responses on that. It said 3 comments and I clicked on it. I thought, that's not very many. And I looked and there were 3 comments and none of them were this story.
Maybe so. They were the most, you know how it filters them sometimes?
Yeah, normally you have to say like ones. All, show
please,
all. But
please may I have all the comments, Facebook.
I didn't even have that option. Anyway, thank you to all of those people. This is written by Zach Zweisen or Zweisen. The priest is alleged to have also used the credit card to buy gifts for his goddaughter via Amazon.
Oh, no.
His goddaughter.
Well, it's God's daughter, so I
We're
think
all
he's
his
allowed.
Goddaughter. A Catholic priest in Pottstown, Pennsylvania, allegedly used a church credit card to spend over $40,000 on power-ups in mobile games Mario Kart Tour and Candy Crush over a 3-year span.
That is, I mean, it's over a 3-year span, but that definitely sounds like addictive sort of gambling.
It does, actually, kind of stuff. Yeah.
He sounds like a bit of a victim, really, to be honest.
That's true. As reported by the Philadelphia Inquirer, on April 25th, Reverend Lawrence Kozak, 51, was charged with theft and other related crimes, according to an affidavit of probable cause for his arrest. He's since been released after posting the $250,000 bail.
Whoa.
But he didn't have $40,000.
He put it on the credit card again. Yeah.
His attorney is reviewing the charges. According to investigators, an accountant working at Kozak's church discovered an astronomical amount of Apple transactions on the church's credit card statements while reviewing its finances in 2022. The purchases reportedly began in September 2019, shortly after Reverend Kozak joined the parish, and ended in July 2022. Allegedly, the Apple ID that purchased the content in mobile games like Candy Crush and Mario Kart Tour was registered to Kozak. Detectives also discovered that an Amazon account connected to the priest had used church funds to purchase items like a fire tablet for Kozak's goddaughter. The gifts included a note that was signed by Uncle Larry. A gift note from Uncle Larry.
Yes.
Other records show Kozak had, at one point, used his personal bank account to pay $10,000 of the church's credit card bill. So he was sort of trying to make amends, I guess. It does sound like this guy was kind of in too deep.
Yeah, the tablet's not okay, but the transactions are. Yeah, that's sad.
He was interviewed by police in 2022, and the priest told them he was seeking out counselling for his mobile game addiction. Mm. He clarified with investigators he'd not spent the money on gambling, but instead spent thousands of dollars on items to power up and gain an advantage in various games. He allegedly denied intentionally using the church's credit card for in-app purchases, claiming the cards were already connected to his accounts and phone to pay church-authorized bills. But he did tell detectives it was possible he'd accidentally used church funds to buy in-game power-ups, saying he wasn't a details guy and that he was sorry he had let it get to this point. The priest was removed from his position at the church in November 2022 after an internal investigation into his spending, revealing his gaming addiction and use of the church funds.
I one day, if I forget to pay my taxes, I'd be like, I'm just not a details guy.
Not a details guy.
Sorry, I'm just not a details guy.
After he was removed, he sent an $8,000 check labelled parish reimbursements to the new leader of the church. In a note included with the payment, Kozak reportedly apologised to the new priest for his, quote, mistake, and planned to pay back the church all the money he owed. Well, he's clearly trying to do the right thing, and by his own admission, has video game addiction. But it's still weird news.
It is weird.
That a priest is playing Candy Crush at all.
He did wrong, but also
sad.
Flip those games.
Yeah.
What is the...
There's no caps on those games like there is with gambling stuff, and that is part of the problem.
It's an option and you don't have to do it, and that's okay to an extent, but we always hear about the worst case scenario where people just get consumed by it, and these games just shouldn't exist or function
there
like that.
Makes me cross.
It's basically like having a little hotel mini bar in an alcoholic's house. Like, oh yeah, if you don't have to use this fridge with alcohol in it, but if you do, just pay a bit of money and drink this alcohol, you know? And if it's sitting right there and they have the option, I mean, I guess they have the option anyway to go to the shop and buy alcohol, but, you know, it's difficult. If it's sitting on your phone, you don't have to spend $40,000 on Candy Crush.
Mm.
Yeah, but if I have an addictive personality or if I've got a video game gambling addiction.
And these games are manufactured to take advantage of people who will spend this money. They're not manufactured to make people destitute, but some people do become destitute and they lose everything because of it. And it's just so insidious and horrible.
Mm-hmm.
And it's talked about so plainly within the development circles of people who own companies who make games like this. They've got all sorts of terms for it.
Yeah.
They are manufactured to take advantage of people.
How can we make
it's
this
awful.
More addictive?
I hate it. It really does my head in. Yeah. You can still enjoy Mario Kart Tour though, if you want.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure it's fun, but I hate stuff like this.
I have some news.
Ashton, do you have some
news? Yeah, I do. It comes from Jonathan Wong on Facebook and at Hojo Blojo on Twitter.
Goodness me.
Comes from Nintendo Life by Jim Norman. Random. Thank you. Crystal studded Nintendo DS expected to reach £15,000 at upcoming auction. And the subtitle is just woof.
Woof.
Which makes sense when you see it. Here's a little something to make your Switch OLED suddenly seem rather inexpensive. An ultra-rare Nintendo DS studded with 2,000 Swarovski crystals is set to go on auction this week, where it's expected to pull in bids of at least £15,000. £15,000. A super shiny handheld commissioned by Nintendo and designed by NYC Peach features a bejeweled pink paw print on top of the clamshell to tie it with the release of Nintendogs in 2005. It is one of only five designs to have been made at the time, one of which still resides in the New York Nintendo store, which combined with all those darn crystals mean that it's always going to fetch a pretty penny. The model will be going under the hammer, not literally, don't worry, at the Wessex Auction Rooms the 2nd of
really
May. Oh my God, it's today. Oh, damn, we should call up and buy it.
Do you reckon it's a Randy Pitchford shirt situation?
Yeah,
where
it's actually
no
£10.
One bids on it at
all. Yeah. As noted on the lot's online listing, the DS comes with its charger and two styluses, and it is in very good condition, though it has some light scratches to the screen. We won't bid any more than £20 then. According to auctioneer Tim Weeks, the lot has drawn in weeks.
Yeah.
We're going to let Ashton get through this article eventually.
Yeah. The lot has drawn, it's actually really short, has drawn in interest from the world, and the successful bidder is likely to be a Hollywood celebrity, as it is a high-end Japanese Nintendo collector. So apparently a Hollywood celebrity is a high-end Japanese Nintendo collector. The current estimated bid is between £15,000 to £18,000, but who knows how far it could go. We'll have to keep an eye on this one to see the winning bid. But if those estimates are anything to go by, expect the cash to be splashing.
Whoa.
Big money Bobby Vegas.
That's what it looks like.
That's hideous.
Yep.
Hey, kudos to Nintendo Life for not taking a paragraph to explain what Nintendogs is and not taking a paragraph to explain what a Nintendo DS is.
Yeah,
but they didn't
them.
Explain what a what crystal is. What was it called?
Swarovski crystal.
Oh. Swarovski crystal.
It's like one of the most expensive.
A big crystal guy.
Swarovski's like jewelers. Like quite, right, you see them around, but Swarovski crystals are like the biggest, most expensive kind of
that thing
brand.
Is horrible looking, isn't it?
Yeah,
it definitely
it's
looks
very
like something 2005 that we could make out of sequins.
I have a bunch of gems on my desk, and
look
Pete
exactly
has a
like
glue
that.
Gun, so we could definitely.
I've got DS. Should we make this happen?
DS. Yeah,
cool.
Yeah.
Let's do it,
and we could sell it for £15,000.
Yeah,
that would be a Randy Pitchford situation, I think. I've got some weird news submitted on Facebook by James Matthews.
No relation.
No relation.
And Ryan Swartz. And on Twitter, it's at, hang on, I've spelt that wrong. Yeah. Ariel_Kent and Hojo Blojo again.
Oh.
This news comes from
a double hammy.
Kotaku. by Lucas Ropeg. Someone created a Fallout-inspired game in Excel that you can play at work. You can also play Fallout at work if you want, but you probably shouldn't. If you thought that Excel spreadsheets were just for mind-numbing office work, think again. A gaming hobbyist has created an Excel-based RPG game that he based on the popular post-apocalyptic game Fallout. It's the end of the world all over again.
Better be set in America or Todd Lavia.
Excel London has been delayed,
Microsoft will release an Excel update that breaks the Fallout game.
Yeah.
How do you turn spreadsheet software into a video game? Don't ask me, because I have less than zero idea, it says. That said, the game's creator, YouTuber Dynamic Pear, has offered a quick tutorial on how to use his weird makeshift game that was developed by everybody's least favorite office software. On his website, Pear gives a brief description of the game's story.
Whoa, like that's crazy to call Excel the least favorite office software.
Yeah, it's not very nice, is it?
No.
Some people love Excel.
Yeah. I love a spreadsheet if it's well made.
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry. Carry on.
It is the 145th year of the Second Age. Life in Mercer is unrecognizable to that which came earlier. The bombs saw to that. Humanity may never recover. Adventure beckons once more. And you are ready to answer its call. The YouTuber The YouTuber explains that his game has two components, mapping and questing and battling. You can move through the...
We definitely need an Oxford comma in there somewhere. Yeah.
You can move through the various areas of the bombed out RPG environment, or you can duel with the various characters you encounter along the way. So there is the spreadsheet. It looks like a map. You can see it's got water and land. And here is the combat, which looks a bit D&D-ish. They've got photos of the things you're fighting. The website also offers more details about the various quirks of the gameplay and includes a link where you can download the game. The inspiration behind this creation, and then it talks about Fallout for about 200 words. Not going to tell you.
Oh.
Anyway, if you're looking to make your workday slightly more interesting and you don't have access to the Eggman game...
What?
My suggestion would be to check out Dynamic Pear's interesting creation. It's probably the most fun you'll ever have with spreadsheets.
I don't like the Kotaku, assuming I've read other articles of theirs.
Yeah,
it is hyperlinked.
Yeah, it is.
Right.
It doesn't. That article still doesn't really tell us much about the game or how it's played.
No.
Well, to answer question one again, maybe that's what Todd needs to do.
Mm.
He needs to outsource the next Fallout game to MS Office.
Yeah.
Yes.
Bill Gates himself asked.
Bill Gates.
It's time, everyone.
Yeah.
For the big discussion. Ooh. It's big discussion time. Time for the big video game discussion that this week's comes courtesy of Ferris Wheeler. Great name.
Mm-hmm.
Good day, Bossaroos. It seems Nintendo are at it again, this time with their legal crosshairs set on Gary's Mod. I am firmly behind...
Not Gamod.
I am firmly behind the big N's right to defend their IP, though I do wonder at what point it becomes overprotective and somewhat unnecessary. After all, Gary's Mod isn't really coming after Nintendo's demographics and profits, are they? I'd like to think that if I owned a big IP, I would be tickled and a bit flattered that so many wanted to reference me in the zeitgeist. I would be interested to know where each of you draw your litigious lines. Ferris.
I love it says, at what point does it become overprotective and somewhat unnecessary? Nintendo crossed that line
it happened a while ago.
Months, years ago.
Yeah.
I've got a write-up from Tom's Hardware, or Tom Shardware, written by Dallin Grimm. PC gaming classic Gary's Mod is nearly 20 years worth of content. Good start. As Nintendo has issued a takedown notice for all Nintendo-based user content in the Steam Workshop for the game. Gary, the eponymous creator of the game, confirmed on Twitter today that there is no mistake, Nintendo themselves issued the major takedown notice. Gary's Mod players spent the first 5 hours after the announcement questioning whether Nintendo truly issued the takedown, pinning the potential blame on trolls. However, Gary took to the internet to confirm Nintendo's involvement. He tweeted, "I have been assured that the takedowns have been verified by Nintendo as legit, so this will now continue as planned. Sorry." And then there's something that hasn't copied properly.
Emojis.
The Gary's Mod Steam page notes that the process of complying with the takedown will take much time, adding, if you want to help us by deleting your Nintendo-related uploads and never uploading them again, that would help us a lot.
Well, this is what I was going to ask, because a bunch of Gary's Mod stuff is just fan-made models and
Most
stuff.
Of it
so
is, yeah.
is that is that their responsibility to get rid of what people have made privately?
This next article does clarify it a little bit. It gives them some probable cause, at least. Nintendo has a reputation for bringing litigation to companies that it believes harm its brand. The company received news coverage most recently for a lawsuit against the Yuzu Switch emulator, arguing in their suit that all emulation in any form is illegal. This move angered game preservation and emulation enthusiasts. Today, Gary's Mod takedown.
Did they win that lawsuit, or is it still going on?
I think it's happened. It's settled. It's done. Emulator's gone.
But did the notion that all emulation is a crime?
I don't think it even went to court. I think they just took it down. Right. And as a result, I think the 3DS emulator went down as well, which is a huge blow for game preservation. Mm-hmm. So that's great. Mm-hmm. Today's Gary's Mod takedown is harder to argue with, as ripping or copying copyrighted assets is fair game for a DMCA request. So it sounds like a lot of the skins have just been ripped out of Nintendo games wholesale.
Right.
So I'm sure some are being created themselves, but even so. If you're unfamiliar, Gary's Mod will likely spark good memories for longtime PC gamers. The Steam Darling has been a fixture of the PC gaming landscape since 2006, inspiring many eras of internet culture like the multiplayer game modes Prop Hunt and Mafia-like Trouble in Terrorist Town, which have seen extensive imitations in AAA games, and years of YouTube animations culminating in 2023 mega hit
Skibbity Toilet.
Skibbity Toilet.
Kieran loves Skibbity Toilet.
Of course he does. The sandbox game is known for the massive workshop of user-made creations, which Nintendo took issue with when it discovered years worth of Nintendo assets, Nintendo assets in-game.
I have a question, though.
Yeah.
So, obviously, Gary's Mod has like 3D models of, like, you can wear Mario's skin or Luigi, and then there's some levels where it is kind of themed around Nintendo levels, as like, you know,
the Bob on Battlefield.
Yeah. So if someone has ripped them straight from Nintendo, how would they be able to know that that's been taken and it's not just like been made in, like, for example, a texture has been ripped directly from theirs? Is it just if it looks like Nintendo, Gary's Mod have to take it down because of the off chance? Or is it like that it's fair game if you designed it? Do you know what I mean? Like, where is where are they drawing the line in terms of Nintendo? What is their precedent of if it even looks like one of our IPs, if it is Mario, but you've drawn or made the model in something and then taken it to Gary's Mod, does that count? Or is it just if it has been ripped? And if it has been ripped, how do they know that it's been ripped?
I guess there'll be a gray area. Like, there'll be some stuff that's obviously just, it's been ripped, that needs to come down. There'll be some stuff that is like so far removed, like someone's badly scrawled a Mario on the wall of some level that is completely unrelated. That's probably fine. And then in between, there'll be these like, handmade assets that perhaps, you know, you're still using the sort of the IP or the likeness. So in that sense, you know, they might have at least one leg to stand on. I think to answer Ferris's question, where do we draw the line? I mean, strictly speaking, like, they are kind of within their rights to say, hey, you're using our stuff, take it down. So I think legally they can do what they're doing. Morally, do I think it's right? Not really. Well, not at all, because they are not losing any money here.
No.
They're not losing any kind of... No one's like making associations between some Gmod Mario character, you know, killing someone with a crowbar and the Nintendo brand. You know, no one is linking those two things together. So far be it from me to say that anyone, whether it's some impoverished individual person versus a huge mega corporation, shouldn't, you know, have a right to all the legal rights that they have. That is fair enough on paper. But should they be doing this? And, like, do I understand how they can sleep at night? Not really, no.
All Nintendo's legal team do, in my eyes, is just pick random things to focus on and make a big deal about it and then move on to the next random thing. Like, every time we see Nintendo doing something, they've scorned themselves on multiple occasions in that they have copyright struck their own content.
Yeah.
And like, I just think that I don't understand what they think is fine and what they deem as theft of their IP. Like, are we going to go after fan art next? If you've drawn Mario fan art, are they going to make you remove that from the internet? If you are someone who makes like commissions of, I don't want to talk about all the kind of horrible things people do to Mario.
The creepy children's videos on YouTube where there's Elsa and Spider-Man and Mario. Yeah,
exactly. Like,
having dentistry done to them.
Yeah. Those are weird and should be taken down, but not because of copyright. But like, it's...
it's just, it's not art.
Yeah, it's weird. It's scary and horrible and it shouldn't be for children. But I do think that like, I just wonder with Nintendo, like where they personally draw the line, because it feels like... there's nothing that they won't go after in terms of content that features their characters and their IPs. This is like you say, it does no harm to them. It's just like models or things that fans have made so that they can bring them over and play as them in other games. And that's not a bad thing. Gmod isn't taking away from people playing Mario. It's just people can play as Mario in another game. I understand it's their IP and people will be in the comments being like, well, actually it belongs to them, which is fair. It does. You're correct.
Yeah.
But does that mean that like no one else on the internet or in the world is allowed to touch Mario? Is Mario off limits to everything and everyone else? Where is the line being drawn? And why did Nintendo... do they have nothing else to do?
And why have they waited this long? Gmod's been around for how long?
20 years.
Yeah, 20 years nearly. And suddenly, I know that, you know, probably in the very early days, there won't have been any Nintendo stuff in there, but there will have been Nintendo stuff in there for at least
a long time.
5, 10, maybe 15 years.
I think that the Yogscast guys, when they used to play Trouble in Terrorist Town like 10 years ago, one of them had a Mario skin.
Possibly.
Then.
Mm-hmm.
It's at least 10 years old. Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah. That's the main thing I've written down, is why now?
Yeah.
I don't understand why now. Is, I don't know if there's like a renewed push to just reclaim everything that you consider yours. I would like to think that they have some sort of fundamental, irrefutable way to prove that there are Nintendo assets being used in Garry's Mod. And quite frankly, I wouldn't be surprised if, seeing as it's been around for so long, and there will be a lot of fan-created stuff as well as stuff that is potentially been ripped from games, the ones that have been ripped from games will have descriptions like, This is the best Mario skin in Garry's Mod because I personally took it from Super Mario Galaxy or something, you know, where they'll just tell on themselves because they never thought the Nintendo would come for them. Because why would they?
Mm-hmm.
What's the point? I don't think you can, as is always the case, I don't think you can dispute that Nintendo has a right to defend its IP. That's understandable. But you also can't dispute that the vast majority of things that they go after are completely unnecessary and make them look bad.
Yeah.
There's just no need for this. Is there something that they've seen recently in Garry's Mod where they're like, absolutely not. You cannot simulate sexual encounters between Mario characters. How long has this been going on? Why has no one told us? Why did none of you tell us that you were doing crazy things with Mario skins in Garry's Mod for 18 years?
Mm.
Why has no one told us this? I don't understand. For me personally, I think the litigious line would be drawn, honestly, probably with the Switch stuff. Because while I disagree with their argument that emulators should be illegal, I perfectly understand them trying to shut down people playing
the game
Zelda on PC.
Yeah.
I get that. I understand the reasoning for that because they are, as you said, losing sales. They're losing money.
Mm-hmm.
It's a current product that's on sale.
Exactly. This threatens no one, has never threatened anybody, will never threaten anyone. And has been around for so long. I don't understand. And they just make themselves look like the villains to, we've said it before, the core audience isn't the people that, you know, the vast majority of gamers, especially with Nintendo, because they attract an enormous casual market. But why would you... why?
It's so strange. And it does make them look like the evil corporation. Like, the things that they have done and the legal... situations that they have found themselves in, put themselves in, and instigated like punishments. I always think about Doug Bowser. Is it Doug Bowser? No. The guy whose name's Bowser, who has will literally.
Gary Bowser's the one who hacked them, right? I think Doug Bowser is.
Doug Bowser is the guy. No, I think one. There's our Bowser that works for Nintendo, and then there's another Bowser that was like arrested, and that guy will never ever.
Doug Bowser is the main guy.
Yeah. He will never ever pay that money back, and Nintendo went after him, and they ruined the rest of his life for. Like, that's not justifiable in what they did to him. Mm-hmm. And everything they do just makes me just feel like their business practices and the things that they view about themselves is just a bit scummy.
Especially when we know that there will have to be some kind of line drawn here with this Garrett. Well, I presume there will have to be some kind of line drawn. Well, yes, there will be some kind of line drawn here. The point I'm trying to make is, where will that line be? And if it is a bit more in favor of the sane side of the argument, as I want to be so bold as to call it, and say that, all right, if you've got a Half-Life character who you've just painted some red, like, you know, dungaree, some overall, yeah, dungarees, yeah. And then maybe put a Mario head that you've sculpted in Blender or whatever on his head.
Does it become a Shrek ears situation?
Well, exactly. Yeah. Like, if that is going to be deemed far enough removed that, like, yeah, Nintendo can't, I am a judge and Nintendo can't take that down. They can take down a model that's been ripped straight from a game. But if you've crafted your own Mario, then that's fine. Then what are they really gaining from this? Like, the one argument I could see them trying to make with saying, I want all Nintendo stuff taken out of Gary's mod, is that people can make stuff with their characters doing things that maybe they don't want their characters to be doing.
Mm-hmm.
But
people will do that anyway, but they'll just do it, you know,
In dreams.
They'll do it elsewhere
or they will continue to do it in Gary's mod with a guy who looks exactly like Mario, except he's got orange instead of red and he has an E on his hat instead of an M. Mm. And he has, you know, maybe also a goatee as well as the mustache. Like, there is a line somewhere, and there's no way that they can fully get away from whatever it is that they don't want to be taking place on Gary's mod.
Yeah.
So why bother in the first place?
Also, this adds so much work to the team behind Gary's mod, because it, like, okay, you can remove everything now, but you can't stop people from uploading things to the Steam gallery. Yeah. And when is that their responsibility? If someone uploads something to their library, does that make it completely theirs? Is someone going to have to go through and manually review every single thing that comes up?
Not to generalize,
Nintendo is coming up.
But I imagine the Gary's mod community are the kind of people who won't take kindly to being told, please take down and don't upload it again. Yeah. You'll have an influx of stuff called Plumber Man.
Yeah.
Or
your Halloween costume type name.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, just.
Yeah,
well, again,
but
that's the point. Like, if Halloween costumes can exist like that, then.
And will Nintendo take umbrage to things being uploaded afterwards? Like, if they're legally trying to sort themselves out now, Gary's mod, to avoid the claws of Nintendo's legal team, does that mean they get rid of everything? But then if in a month's time it's still clear and, you know, then someone uploads something, are they still in trouble? This is such a weird, like, person to go after. It's a forum of things that publicly are brought into it. It's not made by Gary's mod. So will they sue the individual creator, or is it Gary's mod's responsibility for the rest of time to never let anything Nintendo related ever get uploaded again?
Well, it's like YouTube, you know, like nowadays, if someone uploads a movie to YouTube, for example, it's not, well, it is YouTube's fault, but YouTube have things in place now where they are kind of covered for themselves in that they will message the user and say, you have uploaded this movie, that is piracy, and you could potentially long term find yourself in legal trouble. It might be that Gary's mod now have to change their terms of service, make everyone agree to, if you're uploading stuff and it's, for example, Nintendo, you could be receiving a DMCA takedown notice and you are liable for that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And we're putting mechanics in place to legally cover ourselves as Gary's mod, so that if Nintendo come to us and say, here's another Plumber Man, you said that you'd deal with this, they can say, yeah, we are dealing with this. We've made them agree that they're not going to do it. And if they're doing it, they're the ones
in hot
water.
Here's the IP address of the person who did it. Now they can send you money for the rest of their lives.
Yeah.
Seems like a fair punishment. Yeah. We aren't the only people who were slightly confused between Gary and Doug Bowser, because when I searched Gary Bowser, it auto-fills with an Engadget article about Gary Bowser being sentenced, which when you click on it, it says Gary Bowser's the one being sentenced. But clearly in the cached version, it says that Canadian hacker Doug Bowser has been sentenced to 40 years, 40 months in prison.
Doesn't he? He's like the former CEO of Nintendo
America. Doug Bowser is the current... Is the current bigwig.
He's the big, yes. Big boss, yeah.
And Gary Bowser is the hacker.
He sued his own brother.
I know, it's brutal, isn't it? Anyway, point being, this is a farce.
Yeah.
This is really silly.
And Nintendo are going to keep getting away with it because there's literally no one who can stop them.
And they're legally within their rights to do at least some of what they are doing right now.
Yeah.
But we just think that they shouldn't be.
No, kind of abusing it, really.
Or they should, like, you know, take a good long look in the mirror and realize that they're being the bad guys.
Nah, there's no money in that. Got to put those retained lawyers to good
work,
right? That's
true, yeah.
Well, let us know what you thought of all the things we discussed today. Thank you very much for listening and watching, of course. There's a few places you can find us on the internet.
Yes, you can find us at youtube.com and twitch.tv/TeamTripleJump. Almost all of our live streams happen on Twitch, except special ones like the D&D. Oh, how exciting. Mm. And all of our videos go out on YouTube. And if you have got Amazon Prime, you are paying for a whole bunch of things in that bundle, and one of them is a Twitch sub. So you've already paid for it. So if you redeem it against us, you'll get all the benefits of being a sub at no extra cost.
Whoa.
Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and Twitter, on all of which we are at Team Triple Jump. Come and give us a follow. And patreon.com/Team Triple Jump if you'd like to support us.
TripleJ.mup is our website. That's TripleJU.mp. There you can find links to everything that we do. And why not leave a 5-star review on your platform of choice? It helps. Something to do with Al Gore's rhythms. We'd really appreciate it. Thank you in advance. Mm. Ashton, do you have the sponsor there for us?
I do, of course. Coming out the same day as Little Kitty Big City is Little City Big Kitty. It's a bit more haunting than the other one.
Oh no. Thank you so much for watching us and listening to us and being with us this week. We will see you next time.
Bye. Bye.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at hellofresh.com.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences, whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.